Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
A very happy Thursday morning to everyone, all my wonderful pet-loving listeners out there. This is Dr. Roger Welton, host of the Space Coast Pet Podcast. Welcome to the program, everybody, and thank you for tuning in. We have a really, in my opinion, important topic to discuss today. I think that it is very, very pertinent and something that every pet owner needs to really be cognizant of, know the realities of, and I'm very excited that it came from, once again, a listener email. Telling you guys, these emails are so important. Boy, you all keep me going, and it sort of wakes me up to topics that, you know, I have these constant conversations, and it's something that comes up so often, yet it's not always at the surface of my brain that this is really something I need to talk about. And then I read these emails, and I think to myself, wow, you know, I have these conversations so often, and it's reflective in this listener email, and we have just one of those today. So it is sent from Karen from Colonia, New Jersey, which, Karen, if you're listening today, I am from Clark, New Jersey, born and raised there, neighboring town. My veterinarian growing up was actually Dr. DeBakke, who actually ended up, he had gone to the same school that I ended up going to, Ross University, College of Veterinary Medicine. And he was in Colonia, so that's where we took our dog. I believe he's still in Colonia, so wow, small world. I wonder if maybe we even knew each other. I haven't been back in New Jersey in quite a while, but always good to get an email from my old stomping grounds. I know there's people listening from my old stomping grounds. So this email that Karen sent today is about an ever so important topic because it's about cancer and pets. It is so important because it is a reality that I confront every day. I just diagnosed this morning stage 4 lung cancer in a cat. It was a very sad situation. And, you know, that was one that there was really no answer for that one, stage 4 lung cancer. And it just, there was nothing we could do. But there's other cancers that are quite amenable to treatment. And the question that I always get is that the right thing to do? I look at what cancer treatment does to people. Clients ask me, and I just have a hard time wrapping my head around considering doing that to my pet. So please stay tuned. Let's hear this email, and then I'm going to expand on all that because I'd like awareness to get out there because animal cancer medicine, it tends to not get ridiculous, and it's a more beautiful process than most people would ever believe it is. And some of the best, most compassionate, amazingly intelligent, skilled, and dedicated veterinarians I know are veterinary oncologists, which means they're cancer specialists. I'm going to talk about why, but let's get to Karen's email because she inspired this episode. Dear Dr. Roger, one day I found lumps in my yellow lab's neck, and within 1 week, my vet diagnosed him with lymphoma. He wants to refer me to an oncologist to consider chemotherapy for him, says that it is better tolerated in dogs than in people, and in his opinion, he does not consider it overly invasive. I am so torn because I do not want to lose my dog. He is not even acting sick. The only reason I brought him in is I felt these weird lumps in his neck. On the other hand, I know he will get sick soon if I do not act, but at 11 years old, or at any age for that matter, is it right to put my dog through chemotherapy? I have seen what it does to people, and I do not want that for my dog. The extra time is not worth it if he's going to be miserable and sick. Is my vet right that dogs tolerate it better? I love your show, and I've been listening to it for years. I love and trust my vet, but he is rather basic in what he offers, whether he is able or willing. But it seems that you have your hands in all aspects of veterinary care. I would love to know your thoughts on my situation and my concerns. Thanks. I hope this email makes it on the air, but I'm sure you get thousands to choose from each week, so I won't be upset with you if it does not make the cut. I will still be one of your biggest fans. Sincerely, Karen, Colonia, New Jersey. So thank you for this email. And not only did you make the cut, you inspired an entire episode. I actually had another topic planned for today's episode, but this one is so important. And I've already had this conversation, God, 4 or 5 times this week. In fact, just before broadcasting, I had a conversation with a client about getting her yellow lab of all things into an oncologist. Also, I suspect lymphoma in this dog, but not the kind with the big lymph nodes like your dog has, but of the liver. So anyway, let's jump right into this. So Karen is concerned that cancer medicine, when she thinks about it in the paradigm of people, is not something that she wants particularly necessarily for her dog. And she has legitimate concerns, because if it was the same type of reality, I would have the same reservations. But I do know differently. So here's what I learned when I was in veterinary school, rotating through the oncology wing. Now, I didn't actually take the oncology rotation. You know why I didn't? I thought it would be depressing. I thought it would be something that would make me sad every day. What I learned was the opposite, and so I didn't directly rotate through there, but I had cases that the oncology department was involved. So when I was on surgery, for example, both soft tissue and orthopedic, we're removing malignant tumors, and so there's follow-up with oncologists. So I was down in that wing often just by virtue of those rotations, and what I learned was that the goal of animal cancer medicine is very different than it is for people. The ultimate prize for people is eradication of that cancer and ultimate longevity. You want to live, you want to beat the cancer, and some people as patients are willing to, and some doctors are willing to bring the patient, the human patient that is, to the brink of death, literally, to achieve the goal of eradication. They're using such cytotoxic doses, cytotoxic meaning cellular toxic, that we see some really sick people from chemotherapy, because they're just slamming away and making them very ill in the process. So what does chemotherapy attack? It attacks rapidly dividing cells. So rapidly dividing cells are what comprise malignant tumors. That's why chemotherapy works. But there are healthy cells in the body that your body needs to survive, and many of them are rapidly dividing. So what would those cells be? So the bone marrow is constantly rapidly dividing to create red blood cells and white blood cells. So what do we see when we're killing rapidly dividing cells? We see bone marrow suppression, and the result is anemia and immune suppression, because the body's not making enough white blood cells to fight disease. That's one example. Another example, rapidly dividing cells, the gut. So the GI is constantly renewing itself, and those cells are constantly rapidly dividing. And as a result, those cells get attacked by the chemotherapy. What do we see? Severe GI distress very often. Vomiting, cramping, diarrhea, blood in the stool, nasty stuff. And then our third example of rapidly dividing cells, and there's more than this, but I'm just naming the three most common that come to mind when we think of human chemotherapy, and that would be the hair. The hair follicles are rapidly dividing, and that's why hair continually grows throughout the course of our life. For most of us, for a lot of us guys, we don't have quite the same amount on top of our heads as we used to, but for some reason, we get it in other places as we get older. The bottom line is hair is always growing somewhere. It never stops, and it's rapidly dividing cells. So what do we see with chemotherapy? People lose the hair. So that's the goal with people, eradication. And our goal with animals is very different, whether we're looking at dogs or cats. We are looking at a reasonable remission. So, yes, we do want to achieve that longevity, but we are not going to bring that pet to the brink of death to get him there. We want to achieve the longest possible remission while towing the line of maintaining and or restoring that patient's quality of life. So the doses are not so cytotoxic. These dogs, most of them don't even lose clumps of hair. Many of them have very good appetites. Their appetites sometimes will wane a little bit in the early phases of chemotherapy, but the oncologists have become so savvy in loading them up with gastric protectants and antacids and appetite stimulants and anti-nausea medications right out of the gate that many of them don't experience any even waning in appetite, let alone vomiting and diarrhea. So that side of it is good. As the cancer starts to head into a remission, we see these patients just feel better. They have a new lease on life. So quite the contrary, because we are trying to achieve a reasonable remission, taking it as far as we can with the doses, but not hammering them so badly that we're making them clinically sick. That's what we are looking to achieve. Some cancers are more amenable to chemotherapy than others. Some have higher success rates, some have lower success rates. It's really up to you to have the consultation with the oncologist. Hearing what they have to say is, it doesn't cost all that much to have that consult. They review all of the lab work. They review your general vet's general record. And then they will offer you options and say, okay, well, option A, as far as longevity is concerned, and maximum tolerance, this is what you're looking at. This is the gold standard. It costs this much, this many visits for this many weeks, and this is our prognosis. And then they will offer you options on down the line to maybe less, I don't want to say invasive, that's not the word I'm looking for, less labor intensive and less expensive, but maybe less remission rate there. And so that's one of the things that I think is wonderful about the field of oncology is that at least the oncologists I've come across is they're not trying to shove one particular treatment course down the throat of the client. They are actually offering you options and letting you be objective and sit back and discuss with your family and think about your individual philosophies and ethics of your own pet to make the best determination of what you feel is right. So they're big believers in options, 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 options. And not all the fields of veterinary medicine are so reasonable like that. And so sitting back with lack of judgment, I guess I should say. And we're just blessed to have two tremendous oncologists in our town at Animal Cancer Care in Melbourne. Dr. Roof and Dr. Soans are among the best I've ever worked with. And honestly, I don't think I've ever had an experience where I've met an oncologist that didn't have not only the expertise, but the level of compassion. So that's my second point. We're trying to achieve a reasonable remission, maintain quality of life. But, you know, for the first month or two, the dogs were there maybe on a weekly basis or every other week. As time goes on, they're there less. They don't spend time like hospitalized or things like that. They need to have, you know, sometimes intravenous therapy, and they have to be monitored for a little bit. So what the oncology clinics will do is they make the most inviting and warm experience for the patient. So, you know, in the case of cats, they have, you know, cat condo type hospitalization wards. They're not just cages. They have quiet feline rooms that, you know, there's not barking dogs, they're soundproofed, and they're making it as pleasant for the kitty cats. They're making it fear-free. So they're, you know, plugging in feel-away diffusers to put that nice soothing pheromone out there. And they're being very patient. They only hire the most patient staff members that are going to understand that these patients need to be here often and we need to minimize stress. Stress is not only good for the patient from a humane standpoint, it's good for medicine. It's good for healing. So then we look at, on the canine side of it, there's, you know, these dogs are not kept in cages either. They are out about in the clinic as much as possible. They'll maybe dedicate whole exam rooms to them. They'll put down yoga mats. They'll lay down with the dog. They will have toys available and, again, make it as pleasant an environment as possible. On the feel-away analog of the pheromone therapy that's soothing for dogs, there's Adaptil, so they got Adaptil plugins. They're just going out of their way to make a warm atmosphere, and most of these clinics, at least the ones I'm aware of and know and have experienced, there's great bedside manner because that client needs to be there a lot. They need to be reassured. They need to be informed, and they do a really good job of that. So per Karen's point, I do have my hands in a lot of aspects of medicine because I was very fortunate to have joined a practice on the North Shore of Long Island, New York, that was a very self-sufficient practice. We were out there a ways on the island in Suffolk County, and so traveling around the island can be difficult because the traffic is so dense there. I'm sure it's even worse now, but back in the early 2000s when I was there, it was quite a challenge. So one of the things was the owner and his senior veterinarian were big believers in keeping the patients and the clients where they're most comfortable, where they're most familiar, where they have the most trust, and then reaching out and doing the continuing education and getting the expertise necessary to do all of these other things. So we did a lot of orthopedic surgery. We did, I won't get into, all of the bells and whistles, but one of the things we did do was chemotherapy for certain cancers. And one of the cancers, Karen, was for lymphoma. We did a protocol called the Wisconsin Protocol. It's a 26-week protocol. And some of the best experiences I had as a veterinarian were my lymphoma cases, because they come in once a week for 3 weeks, and then they go to every other week for an additional 3 weeks, and then it goes to every third week, and then it goes to once a month, and that continues for, a good like half to three quarters of the year. And the owners come in and they're so happy because after week one, and your dog has what's likely the multicentric variety of lymphoma, which is sort of like almost a Hodgkin's disease type presentation that is very, very responsive to chemotherapy, and you don't have to, create big doses to get there. The chemotherapeutic protocol that I had used back then, and I do believe that it's still very much like the Wisconsin with maybe minor variations, but they come in after the first week, the nodes have all shrunk, the appetite is great, and the dog's got a new lease on life. That's the majority of the stories we get with lymphoma treatment. And then there was a few other cancers that we treated, but when things got really complex and there was a lot of nuance to the protocols and needing the ability to alter the protocols in real time because certain cancers can throw you certain curveballs, we most certainly still referred those out to proper oncologists. But I did dabble quite a bit in chemotherapy. And when I first got to Florida, I did quite a bit of chemotherapy, again, with those certain cancers. I kind of got out of it just because those drugs are very expensive. And my caseload as a single practitioner when I first got down here and started my own practice wasn't large enough. And as far as the oncology is concerned, and at the time, the demographics of the area, people just weren't really opting for that kind of care. So these expensive drugs were just expiring on my shelf. And so I just decided to start referring them out. I never really got back into cancer medicine, but I did experience and I treated quite a bit of it for about 5 years. Now, though, I work in close conjunction with my local oncologists, and I'm still very much in the loop, although I'm not doing it, physically. So as far as expectations for lymphoma, again, one of the most treatable cancers, your vet is right. I side with him on this completely. So good tolerance. The highest remission rate I ever achieved for lymphoma was over 30 months. So we're looking at, that's close to 3 years. I believe the average is somewhere like 18 to 22 months. But just because you lose remission doesn't necessarily mean the patient dies. These oncologists can sort of hit the reset button, reintroduce some version of protocol, and then get back into that remission. So I saw this one Beagle patient, the one that went 30 months, came out of remission twice. That was a particularly aggressive form of lymphoma. It was pretty sad because the dog was only four or five years old. But that dog lived, almost three more years with a very aggressive form of it. And her name was Clementine, I'll never forget her. And the young owners that loved her were grateful for those almost 3 years, and they ended up having this wonderful relationship, not with their oncologists, because I had to refer them out. We would do a lot of the follow up lab work and fax it over and do some of the ancillary stuff that could be done in general practice that would cost a little bit less, and we could easily do, and we're right down the street from them versus schlepping it out to Orlando to get those certain things done, like general blood work and various things. So that was a great experience for them. We got very close with them, and that's typically what you see. So let's just understand, the biggest takeaway of this episode is that animal cancer care, it's all about quality. And in those cases that don't even tolerate the dialed back doses of chemotherapy that we prescribe for animal cancer care, well, then we stop. We stop, and then we manage them palliatively, and we let them live out their life with as much quality and dignity as we can. So we're not just going to hammer away. So, you know, let's say, Karen, your dog is one of those minorities that, okay, well, the chemotherapy is not sitting well with him. Well, then we'll stop. That's it. It's not like they're going to make you do anything. They're not going to say, no, you need to plug away. No, they're going to say, you know what? Let's stop. Let's see how he does. Maybe we can resume in a few weeks if you want, if you feel you want to go there. Then maybe we try again. We dial back the doses even further. That's the discussions you have. So it's not this, you know, sad, morbid situation that people would envision for an animal cancer ward. You actually come in, they're wagging their tails, owners are laughing, they're interacting with the staff, they often bring them cupcakes and donuts and food because they're so grateful and they develop such a relationship with these people. It's really a wonderful thing. And yes, you lose a lot of these patients eventually. No one lives forever anyway, and like I said, we're not trying to necessarily achieve maximum longevity, and so we will lose these patients, but we buy them 1, 2, 3 years. You know, that's a bigger chunk of time for a dog than it is for us, for a cat than it is for us. 1 year of our life is 6 years of their life, roughly. And so, you know, if you can maintain good quality and live an additional 6, 12, 18 years, would you consider that? I think I would, especially if my kids one day crank out some grandkids for me. I would most certainly take that. So, that's it in a nutshell. What a great email. What an important topic. Ladies and gentlemen, keep these emails coming. You are my lifeblood. Honestly, I think it's very clear how much you all inspire me, and I hope you continue to do so as you've been doing. Thank you, Karen, for your email. I wish you the best of luck. Everyone out there who has a pet with a cancer diagnosis and an oncology referral is feasible because we're not in a crisis. We're maybe not well, but not in a crisis, and you have time to think this through and work this up and get the opinion of an oncologist. Get that opinion and see what they have to say. At least go there. If it's cost prohibitive, that's one thing. I understand that. But if it's not necessarily going to break the bank, I would most certainly recommend seeing an oncologist. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. As always, I am so grateful and appreciative that you take a moment to care about what I have to say. Talk to you next Thursday.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.